Spine tingling greetings, everyone. The amazing tunes are courtesy of the phenomenal country legend, my friend Bobby Mackey, and the kick-ass band that is Alien Manor.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you listen from resort town to tiny village, from tropical paradise to the biggest of cities, and everything in between. It is absolutely appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Marshfield, Wisconsin, Bhopal, India, Haines, Alaska, Sheridan, Wyoming, Bedchen, Belgium, and Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Today we find ourselves near one of my favorite places on planet Earth, in Louisiana. It's not too terribly far from New Orleans, a couple hours. As many of you know, I used to go to New Orleans every single year, starting as a child. When I was a young, tender age, I would be taken to places like the Audubon Zoo, the swamp tours where we would feed alligators marshmallows. And as I got to be a little older, you know, more appropriate age, I got to go to the cities of the dead. Gotta love those cemeteries and terrific drop-dead gorgeous plantations like Greenwood Plantation, Oak Alley Plantation, been there a bunch of times, and one of my favorites, the Myrtles Plantation. And you guessed it, that's exactly where we find ourselves right this very second, the latter, Myrtles Plantation. Located in St. Francisville, so again, close to 2 hours from the Cajun City, the Crescent City, and it's been over 30 years. At first I was telling people 20 years, but then I was doing the math and I'm like, wow, holy shit, it's actually been closer to 30 years since I have visited the Myrtles Plantation. But you better believe it is on my bucket list to go back and stay there sometime, as I know now it's a lovely bed and breakfast, so pretty badass stuff right there. I love when you are able to stay at haunted locations, and this place, it's as haunted as they get. So the one thing that I really remember when I was there all those years ago, when I took the tour through the gorgeous plantation, was this. When you would stay at a plantation as a visitor, it was kind of like a tradition, if you will, that the owner, the family that lived in this plantation, would greet you in the morning with a bowl of sliced fresh pineapple. All you need is the fork, which is right there, and you're ready to have a beautiful, delicious, juicy meal. The pineapple, again, it's ready for you to eat and enjoy. But the day that you woke up and there's a whole pineapple waiting for you with no instruments to cut that bad boy open, that means that you've overstayed your welcome. That it's time for you to head home. You know the saying, my friends, you don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here, baby. You get the idea. I mean, it's just kind of a nice way to tell your guests, hit the bricks, sweetheart, without the words having to actually leave those lips of yours. Take that pineapple, slice into that bad boy, in the comfort of your own home, and enjoy. So, this home contains half a dozen chimneys, which is pretty impressive in my book, and 22 rooms. It has an absolutely gorgeous French crystal chandelier that weighs, guess, no guesses? 300 pounds. Yeah. So now we know this location as Myrtle's Plantation. But when it was first built in the late 1700s, it was known as Laurel Grove. While this plantation has been in the same family for a few decades now, it has changed hands many times before, and I will talk a little bit about that shortly. The original building was built back in 1796 by General Bradford, who lived here for a number of years. And believe it or not, his time here, it was actually as a punishment. for his part in the Pennsylvania Whiskey Rebellion. He would stay here at the plantation until President John Adams pardoned him for his part in the rebellion. And yeah, it indeed was a punishment. While a plantation is much better than a jail cell, right? I don't think anybody would disagree with me there. He was living life without his family. But you better believe that once this gentleman was pardoned, his loving wife and their 5 children were reunited with him once more. They left their home in Pennsylvania, and they came to be here with him in Laurel Grove in Louisiana. They traded one Ia for another Ia. So Bradford would stay here until his death, that being in 1808. After the general dies, his family would stay here for another 9 years. Elizabeth, his heartbroken widow, she would keep the plantation kept up and running the entire time. And as Elizabeth got older in age, she decides that she wants to hand the management wand over to her son-in-law, Clark Woodruff, and her daughter, Sarah. Legend has it that there was a slave named Chloe that worked here at the plantation. Now, supposedly, she worked inside the plantation itself. This was a huge deal because most of the slaves were stuck working outside. And if you've been to Louisiana before, in the summertime, right, you know just how muggy and humid it truly is. So to work on the inside was pretty much like working in the Ritz-Carlton. Some stories say that Chloe and the master of the house, Woodruff himself, were involved in a hot, sexy, steamy affair. One day, she was eavesdropping, her ear anxiously glued to the door. She had grown rather paranoid that he was getting tired of her and that he may not want her around the house anymore and that she would be stuck working outside with all the other slaves. She could not let that happen. She had to prove her self-worth to the family, most importantly to Woodruff. She had to prove that they were better off with her than without her. And she would go to the extreme to do that. He catches her eavesdropping, and it said he cuts her ear off as punishment. And it said that for the rest of her days, she wore a turban to cover that ear. With this incident taking place, she knew that she was really in jeopardy now. She was desperate. It just so happened one of Woodruff's beloved children, a daughter, just so happened to be celebrating a birthday. What better time than right now to bake a cake? Chloe knew her way around the kitchen. Boy, did she ever. She had baked many a cake, but this cake would be different. It would contain an ingredient that was highly toxic, oleander. Don't get me wrong, this flower is gorgeous, but you better believe it can pack a deadly punch. Eating this poisons your body. You would experience nausea. You would most likely throw up, and a lot. You would encounter abdominal pain that Houdini could not tolerate. Like I said, the flower, absolutely beautiful. There's different colors that varies in color, like yellow, pink, red, coral, white, amongst others. But consume any part of this flower, stem, or plant, and it could be the last thing that you do in your life. And if you use it, like to feed it to somebody, well, then that's just plain murder. Might as well be arsenic. So the legend goes that the terrified Chloe, thinking that her relationship with Woodruff would end and that she would be just a regular slave working outside, she felt like she was cornered, like a terrified dog quivering in the corner, desperate. She could find no other option in her head, and she bakes the deadly cake. She just figured that the family would get sick, she would nurse them back to health, and everything would go back to normal. Then Woodruff wouldn't be able to get rid of her. Hey, she just helped my family. She's a saint. Well, so was Lucifer. So she never intended for anybody to die. But again, she was just desperate. As the story goes, That's exactly what happened. Supposedly, Woodruff's wife was pregnant, and she died along with the unborn baby and two of their children as well. Now, quickly after the deaths, Chloe admits to what she had done, and after the confession, the other slaves capture her, and it is said that they hang her from one of the myrtle trees on the plantation. Then they threw her body, once they weighted it down, into the Mississippi River. Now, yeah, this may definitely be more legend than anything, as I see that two of the Woodruff children died in 1823 and 1824, both from yellow fever, which most of us know plagued New Orleans a number of times. But I'm a huge fan of legends, and Chloe is a legend that I had heard almost 30 years ago, so I just had to share this story. Okay, come on, how can somebody do an episode about the Myrtles Plantation and not mention Chloe? I was just a very young teen when I had gone, so actually, I want to say maybe, possibly, Chloe's one of the very first legends that I ever heard, and it had stuck with me. AmericanHauntingsInc.com gives some more information when it comes to Clark Woodruff. Quote, he began his studies with Judge David Bradford and soon earned his degree. He also succumbed to the charms of the Bradford daughter, the lovely Sarah Matilda. Their romance blossomed under the shade of the crepe myrtle trees that reportedly gave the home its lasting name. The young couple was married on November 19, 1817, and for their honeymoon, Woodruff took his new bride to the Hermitage, the Tennessee home of his friend, Andrew Jackson. After the death of David Bradford, Woodruff managed Laurel Grove for his mother-in-law, Elizabeth. He expanded the holdings of the plantation and planted about 650 acres of indigo and cotton. Together, he and Sarah Matilda had three children, Cornelia, Gail, James, and Mary Octavia. Tragically, their happiness would not last. Unquote. Now, what I'm going to read next from the same article, it's basically proof that the whole Chloe story is indeed just a legend and not truth. But again, it's still part of the Myrtle Plantation history, and it will always be connected to the Myrtles Plantation. Anyways, continuing on with the article, quote, on July 21st, 1823, Sarah Matilda died after contacting yellow fever. The disease was spread through a number of epidemics that swept through Louisiana in those days. Hardly a family in the region went untouched by tragedy and despair. Although heartbroken, Woodruff continued to manage the plantation and to care for his children with help from Elizabeth. But the dark days were not over yet. On July 15, 1824, his only son, James, also died from yellow fever. And 2 months later, in September, Cornelia Gale was also felled by the dreaded disease. Woodruff's life would never be the same, but he managed to purchase the farm outright from his mother-in-law. She was quite elderly by this time and was happy to see the place in such good hands. She continued to live at Laurel Grove with her son-in-law and granddaughter Octavia until her death in 1830. Unquote. In 1834, Woodruff would sell the plantation to a gentleman named Gray Stirling. Woodruff himself would go on to be a judge, and eventually he draws his final breath November 25th of 1851. With Woodruff's exit, now enters Ruffin Stirling. And I apologize, I probably butchered that name. He was beyond wealthy and an extremely successful businessman. So much so that the Myrtles Plantation, or at that time, Laurel Grove, was not his only plantation. He had several scattered about the Mississippi River on both sides of it. It is this family that would make this plantation grow almost by half its size. They also are responsible for changing the name from Laurel Grove to the Myrtles Plantation. When Stirling dies on July 17th of 1854, just a few years after the construction was completed on the plantation, his cause of death was consumption, what we now know as tuberculosis. It seems that after the patriarch's death, the family was cursed with bouts of bad luck. And I quote AmericanHauntingsInc.com once more, quote, "The family was often visited by tragedy. Of 9 children, only 4 of them lived to be old enough to marry. The oldest son, Lewis, died the same year as his father. Daughter Sarah Mulford's husband was murdered on the front porch of the house after the Civil War. The war itself wreaked havoc on the Myrtles and on the Stirling family. Many of the family's personal belongings were looted and destroyed by Union soldiers, and the wealth that they had accumulated was ultimately in worthless Confederate currency. To make matters worse, Mary Cobb had invested heavily in sugar plantations that had been ravaged by the war. She eventually lost all of her property. She never let the tragedies of the war and others that followed overcome her, however, as she held on to the Myrtles until her death in August 1880. She was buried next to her husband in the family plot at Grace Church in St. Francisville. On December 5th, 1865, Mary Cobb hired William Drew Winter, the husband of her daughter Sarah Mulford, to act as her agent and attorney to help her manage the plantation lands. As part of the deal, she gave Sarah and William the Myrtles as their home." Unquote. So, you know, life was good at first. They're in love. They're proud new owners of an ever so gorgeous plantation. A plantation that they loved so much that they got married there. They had 6 children, 2 sons, and 4 daughters. Tragedy strikes, though, when their 3-year-old daughter's life is claimed due to typhoid fever. And in the late 1860s, the family finds themselves completely broke. I believe they went bankrupt. And they're no longer able to keep the ever so beautiful Myrtles plantation. While they do lose it for a while, they do eventually get it back a couple years later. But the family is about to get hit hard with one of the most difficult things that they ever would go through, next to losing that child to typhoid fever. There are many stories about several murders that supposedly took place here. None are actually confirmed murder cases except for one sole murder, and that is the murder of the unfortunate William Winter. He was in the plantation when he's called outside. He goes on that front porch, and a man shoots him dead. Unfortunately, I hate to say this, the man remains unidentified to this very day, getting away with murder. The Myrtles Plantation finds itself a slot in the National Register of Historic Places in 1978, and rightfully so. So the Myrtles Plantation is believed to be extremely haunted. Many refer to it as being the most haunted home in America. Whether Chloe is real or not, a woman wearing a green turban covering her ears has been seen roaming the property. Maybe it's Chloe, maybe it's somebody else. There's a famous picture of an apparition being caught standing on the side of the house. I bought that postcard 30 years ago when I was there, and I still have it somewhere. Many believe this is Chloe. Again, I'm pretty positive that Chloe is just a legend, as the people who were supposedly killed by the oleander-laced cake actually did die from yellow fever. So who is this woman? Maybe she's another slave that the family had. I don't know. But she's been seen around and she's been caught on camera. When I was there, oh so many years ago, they showed us a mirror that is believed to have either a handprint or scratch marks on it. And so every time I watch a documentary or something about the Myrtles Plantation, I always think about, yes, that pineapple. Ooh, yeah, baby, juicy pineapple. And that mirror. Speaking of the mirror, ictales.com talks about it a little. Quote, "When you visit the Myrtles Plantation, the tour will take you to the mirror and describe people's experiences of seeing a face, fingerprints of the children, and also claw marks. According to them, the face belongs to Sarah, and the children are also hers. The claw marks are nothing but Sarah attempting to escape from the mirror. quite spooky to hear, and if you are a brave heart and love to experience paranormal activities, do visit the Myrtles Plantation. Unquote. Now, in the same article, IcyTales.com, they share an interesting experience. Again, I quote, "A film that had an apportion of it shot at the Myrtles gave its cast and crew members a nerve-chilling experience. Once the crew moved the furniture in the dining room for filming, upon their return, they found it moved back to its initial position, though none was present in the room while the crew left. Mysteries also faced were several technical difficulties while filming a segment regarding the supposed hauntings at the Myrtles Plantation." Unquote. So the first floor is home to a gorgeous piano, and it has gained quite the reputation as it is known to play some tunes all on its very own. Just who's responsible for this? Whose unseen hands are creating this eerily beautiful music? Are you planning a trip? Will you be in the St. Francisville area? You can stay here at the beautiful Myrtles Plantation. I did go on their website and I looked up prices as I was curious. Now, mind you, these are the prices as of late July 2025. And I put in that I was checking in on a Monday and leaving the following day, and these were the prices that I found. Now, there are several different options. You have the cottages, the rooms, and you better believe it, the suites. So for $166, you get the Amelia Garden Room, the LaSalle Garden Room, and the Carondelet Garden Room. For $175, you get the Octavia Room and the Prytania Garden Room. $180 gets you the William Winter Room and the John Leake Room. I remember William Winter's the only murder that is known to have taken place here. For $202, you can stay at the Fanny Williams Room. And for $206, you can stay in the Laurel Garden Room or the Josephine Garden Room. And for 270 big ones, you can stay in the largest suite they have to offer, the Judge Clark Woodruff Suite, and the following cottages: the Crep Myrtle Cottage, the Caretaker's Quarters Cottage, the Cypress Cottage, the Willow Cottage. Those are all for $270. If you are planning a trip out there, I recommend that you do your research just checking out different days. Like, if it's like, oh, we have to be there these certain days because we have a schedule to follow, then, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But if you're more loose on the days, like it doesn't really matter and you want to save some dollars, I would recommend doing some homework. As I changed my days from Monday to Thursday, you know, going Thursday and leaving Friday, and suddenly the Judge Clark Woodruff suite went from $270 to $315. I don't know, that's quite a difference in my book. The William Winter and John Leake rooms both soared up $45 extra. Most of the cottages went up to $306 versus $270. And the only room that I saw that actually went down like $3 or $4 was the Fanny Williams room.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single damn one yet? No need to worry, just hit up any of those podcast platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Deezer, Pocket Cast. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Brothers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and I will
see you next week.